So for those of you who are here for the first time or were not here last week, what we began last week is what's going to be a series of teachings. And I think the way I'd like to speak about the series in a general sense would be to say that the challenge that we face in life and in meditation, and there's obviously many, but the primary one that we face is how to move from our concepts or ideas about ourselves, about each other, about the world, really pretty much about anything. How do we move from those concepts, those ideas, which are very conditioned and they're very powerful and habitual for us? How do we move from those concepts, ideas, to our direct experience of life? To what we directly experience. How do we make that transition or journey? Now, in a way, we've already made it. Because we came here, in this body at least, largely without concept. This is just straight developmental psychology, or really in a sense experiential fact, that there was a time when we did not know ourselves as a human being. We didn't know ourselves as a woman or a man. We didn't have concepts about good and bad, better and worse, and no concepts about heavens and hells and enlightenment and non-enlightenment. None of that stuff existed. That we really were just pure being. And then we had our, you could say, fall from grace, or we fell asleep. We entered the field or the realm of conditioning, which involved accumulating concepts and ideas. We were told many of these. We don't remember this. But we were told by well-intending, many times, well-intending adults, our parents and others, you're a boy, you're a girl. This is what you do, this is what you don't do, this is good, this is bad, this is what religion is, this is what religion isn't. Lots and lots and lots of stuff came into us. It's very rare actually for an adult to be able to remember what it was like to have none of those concepts present. But it was there for all of us. For at least some period of time. So in a way, the journey has already been made. And when the teachings say all human beings, all beings are already free, they're already awake. But that doesn't mean all human beings realize that. So the journey really is one of realization. It's waking up to what we already are. It's coming out of the conceptual maze and trappings. And I'm not saying all of our conceptual activity must be a trap. We can use it well as a tool. But does it absorb your life? Because if it absorbs your life, then along with those concepts that happen largely up here, one can find one's life at times absorbed with emotions. Absorbed with concerns, excessive concerns about the body and the body's health or disease. And this basic thrust to actually try to survive better, or at least maintain one's survival. And there's a lot of conditioning that supports many human beings to try to survive as good as you are, if not better. And sometimes along with that better surviving or existing is the notion of success. And of course, anytime you hold up a notion of success, then you're going to be dealing in part with what appears to be its opposite, which is failure. You hold up concepts and ideas of gain, and you're going to be facing, sooner or later, concepts and experiences of loss. That's how it works. So what we're going to do is we're going to, as much as possible, see if we can directly begin to cut through some of the conceptual overlays, some of the conceptual ideation, and drop more fully into our direct experience. You could say the living reality of what's here, the living reality of what we are, and with that, the possibility of recognizing more clearly for ourselves what is freedom, what are the teachings really pointing at, both in a very practical sense and in their ultimate sense. So just a very quick sort of review about what we touched on last week. Experientially, we went into what are known as the three aspects of posture, because for the practice, the meditation practice, to really do what it can for us, we have to really actually be skillful and be able to practice it correctly. And so one of the primary places that we start, and this is true pretty much across the board, not just in Buddhist practices, but in many of the other meditative traditions as well, the posture, the body posture that we're working with, just like if you were doing Tai Chi, the body posture and how you're moving with those movements or katas is extremely central to the overall practice and its effect. So we worked with what I called the physical part of the posture, which is the 12 points, which we'll review again tonight. And then we looked into how those 12 points can lead to a more immediate and direct, tangible sense of the body energy, yeah, that the body really is a field of energy. That's what it is. And then the third aspect with the posture is what's called the awareness aspect itself, and that's where we'd start to utilize what's called the central channel in this body, and we begin to access that and begin to shift from, this is very key now, shift from developing a relationship, call it equanimous, open, loving, peaceful relationship with our experience, which makes a lot of sense to have a good quality harmonious relationship with our experience, shifting from that, as nice as and wholesome as that is, to having a relationship with awareness. And this is where it gets a little tricky, because awareness begins to recognize itself. Awareness begins to see it itself. It's like, example would be, you could look in the mirror all day long at your face. Are you seeing what you really are? Are you seeing what you really are? In the same way, you could look at experience your whole life. And when most of us begin to meditate, we are taught, actually, and we really do believe in the value of being able to look directly at our experience. And what is our experience? Our sense experience, our physical experience, our emotional experience, our mental experience, our perceptual experience. And we begin to see the anatomy, the living anatomy of experience. But what's embedded in that, and what's often missed until it isn't, is that we don't often get the invitation, and therefore we don't take the journey into that which is aware, that which sees experience. In Hinduism it's called the seer, in Buddhism it's called awareness. In some traditions it's called the witness, although there is no solid witness, there is witnessing, but there is no witness. That's a concept. And so that shift is one of the shifts that we're going to try to see if we can facilitate here. Now, the awareness, which I'll be speaking about in different ways, because we hear things spontaneously in the way that we hear things, and we often hear things through the filter of our concepts. We hear things through the filter of our conditioned mind. We don't often hear things directly with what's called direct perception. We actually hear things through some veil or lens, actually, believe it or not, of distortion. And I don't mean this in a negative sense, I just mean this in a conditioned sense. So that's why it's important for things to be described in different ways. Yeah, even if there's just one of us listening, because we don't know what's going to really resonate. And when something really resonates in the way that I'm talking about it, it's not just all of a sudden the music resonates and you just feel very emotional. Okay, that's an emotional resonance. Like the music touches you. Right? The resonance that I'm talking about is that your conceptual mind relaxes, not just your body. Your conceptual mind opens beyond itself, so to speak. And what's there? Space. And in this sense, space is analogous to awareness. Awareness and space, for now, are the same. So the next step is this space that we sometimes feel inside. For example, one can sit in meditation and sometimes you ask the person, so what is happening? And they say, it feels very spacious. It feels very light. It feels very open. It feels not tangled or conflicted. It feels easy. It feels peaceful. These are all words that could come. Really, what's in there, oftentimes not described and sometimes described, is that there's a sense of space or spaciousness. What we don't often see is that that space that is experienced inside the form is exactly the same. It's identical with the space around the form. So if there's any sense of space within, that space within is identical with the space without. And of course, this notion of within or inside and outside, right? These are just concepts. See this? There's a concept that there's an inside. And there's a concept that there's an outside. And what's often the so-called boundary, or you could say layer or wall between? It's the skin. This is a belief. This is a view. I'm in here. And now everything else is out there. Everything else is other. So the other possibility is that as we work with these teachings, we can begin to dismantle that which generates unhappiness, that which generates suffering, that which generates discontent. And what is that? That which generates those things is the sense of separation. The more connected we feel, in a way, to almost anything, if we're connected properly, even to fear and terror and anger, when there's a deep connection to those things, life in that instant is not fragmented. It's whole. It's right there. There's an intimacy that's undeniable. Now, it's partial. Temporary, it comes and goes. What we often don't see as well is that the sense of separation also comes and goes. And because the sense of non-separation is less familiar to us, it's more subtle, it's less obvious. Again, as I mentioned last week in brief, it's often overlooked. And we're very familiar with being in here, and you're out there. But then when we have a connection, we have an emotional connection, we have an intellectual connection, we have a physical connection, we feel that shift happening, and we are experiencing the moment, experiencing life, experiencing the other and ourselves, so to speak, differently. So, back to space for a moment. The connection to space, to awareness as space. It's critical that we begin to open beyond the space that we experience inside, as much as that's important. Because as long as that space inside is being cultivated in a way that separates it from everything else, you're living in isolation. You're living in your ivory tower. You're living in a meditative prison. And this is the same thing that happens if people get connected to particular states, like some people really like concentration, or in my case, I really like, well, I guess I used to, equanimity. Some people really like, they really identify with joy. Okay, these are just qualities that come, the good, wholesome qualities, but they come and they go in the meditation. I want to say a few words about the particular practice tonight before we go in and begin to actually go with the instruction on it. Still with us, Janet?
She's got yes.
Thank you. Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yes. Could you pull the screen a little towards you?
I can try.
No, yeah, like that.
That's as much as it opens.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking for what you need. So what are we sitting on? On the floor. Beneath the floor. Foundation. Earth. From very early in our education, maybe all the way back to kindergarten, if that's where we started with so-called formal education, or maybe even in our home before we went to formal education, we were taught things about the earth. For example, some of us were taught the earth is solid. Solid. If we were taught the earth is solid, along with that, whether it was implied or explicitly described, was the view, you are solid. Your being is solid. What else? The earth is here to produce life. It's another idea, another view. It's here to grow things. It's here to grow your food. Trees. This is what the earth is here for. This is what the earth is. Get a little bit more refined with our scientific view. The earth is a geological, geographical, scientific, material thing. And with that view, sometimes comes the view the earth is profane, which means it's not sacred. And even if you receive teachings that the earth is Gaia, the earth is mother, and they make you feel good, those ideas seem to resonate some, you even feel them down inside of you, you still feel there's the earth and there's me. And it is worse than that, obviously, doesn't it? The earth is here for me to exploit. The earth is here for me to take advantage of. The earth is here for me to own. You know, the American Indian tribes, they don't have a sense of ownership, like titles with your name on it for the land, because they don't have that view that you own the land. But that gets challenged a little bit when American Indian tribe gets kicked off of land and moved to a reservation. That doesn't feel very good. How would you feel if somebody came in and said, you don't own your house anymore? It happened to my mom's house in Oakland, California. There's a highway that goes through where her house used to be in Oakland, California. And when she was not as old as she is now, I said, Mom, you going to go back? You ever want to go back? She says, I don't want to go back. The place is ruined. There's a highway through my house. There's a sense of ownership. I own this. You see, if I have this concept and idea that I own this piece of earth, then that's got to be coming from someplace inside that I think I own, right? Back in here, I own. That gets projected out to there, I own. What we want to do tonight particularly is we're going to explore a little bit, do a little bit of meditative work to see if these views actually are worth holding on to. And you may have other ones about what the earth is. Because even if you have a very broad, conceptual, open not too biased, judgmental view of things, your concepts, your experience of life, what's actually happening, particularly if you meditate, comes up, you might say, or out into those concepts, and keeps asking those concepts to reformulate, to adjust, and sometimes to completely go away. Because they don't always hold up to the actuality of what's happening in your direct experience. For example, that the earth is solid. When we sit and meditate sometimes, we actually feel the vibrancy of the earth. And we begin to sense something in that life that's there that really isn't so solid. You may know about the teaching when the Buddha was having his final meditation and he was being, you might say, attacked or inundated by the full force of Maya, which in Buddhist psychology is called illusion, or they call it Mara. Yeah, it's in Christian teachings the devil. He's being completely and utterly pushed to his limit by these forces. And what does he do? He reaches down and he touches the earth. It's a big teaching about this that I won't go into, but he goes down and touches the earth and establishes his right to sit still with earth as his witness or his ally and see through this darkness, see through this until the work is done. Look this stuff up. It's on the internet if you find the right website. The whole mudra that he did with his hand to the position of the fingers is a big thing for some people. So, if the space around the body is identical with the space inside the body, and that the space inside the body and the space outside the body are identical with awareness, this is very important. But then we go to the earth. And as our concept about the earth loosens up and we begin to experience the earth as what? As something that's actually living through us, not something that we're living on. Something that's living through us. If you don't like it like that, then you could go the other way. Something that you're living through. And that it has experiential resources and opportunities and teachings to offer when we tune into it that are incredibly important, not just in terms of how we sit on it, but how we walk on it, how we do everything on it. Because have you ever noticed, unless you jump up in the air for a little while, your body's touching the earth all the time. Through this bed, through the chair, through the cushion, through the rug, through the house. There's this contact. And then another angle. The elements, the actual elements that make up the earth are the same elements that make up this body. And these elements, what are called the five great elements, are constantly changing and in transformation. So what we're going to do tonight now is we're going to go back through and just review, and we'll do it meditatively, so we'll go back into our posture and do it. We're going to go through the 12 points of posture, and then from there we're going to move into meditation with the earth. Nice to have you both here. That was a mommy with a big baby inside the belly, Janet. You hear that?
Yes, I heard that. I have my microphone off, so I have to jump up and unmute every time you ask me something.
Okay, so you can hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, so we're going to go into the practice now, so if you'd like to, you can do it with us.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so what we want to do for the posture, again, this is a review for most of us, but for some of us, it's worth doing many, many times so that you get it, you get a sense of rightness, you get a sense of correctness, you get a sense of stability, of certitude in your posture that's reliable and repeatable. So the first thing would be that you feel the connection that your buttocks is making on the surface beneath you, sofa, chair, cushion. And that's a general sense of just the weight and pressure that you sense there. And stay with that until it's very clear and distinct. A sense of weight through the sits bones, buttocks, on your sitting surface. And although I already mentioned it, in the general seated sensation, there are those particular points called the sits bones and you want to focus in on those now and let the weight of the body be evenly distributed between both the left and right sits bones. So with this, you don't want to be too far forward or too far back. Not to the left or to the right, but rather right in the center. You have a sense of the sits bones evenly represented. Move the attention to your hands. If they're on your thighs or your knees, you want to make sure that they're comfortable, that your wrists are easy, your hands feel open and unencumbered. And you can tune into that quality of, if they're on the thighs particularly, not too far forward, not too far back. Hands are where they are resting comfortably and easily. And you can tune into your lumbar spine. And the instruction here is to, in one sense, not be collapsed, and in the other sense, not overextend. So we're looking for a sense of alignment into the lumbar spine that comes right up from the sits bones, attend to your body this way, other parts of the body will naturally wake up and align as well. For example, the shoulders, the lumbar spine is correct. Even just a little bit, you'll find the shoulders settle down, they relax. You don't have to try to adjust them, they just find a more balanced place to rest. This is the shoulder blades, the tops of the shoulders. When the shoulders are settled correctly, then the space between the shoulders and the hands and fingers, what we call the arms, lightens up, brightens up, wakes up. When I say wakes up, becomes conscious. Now the next step is the spine itself. From the sacrum, right up to the top of the spine, which would be at the base of the skull. Tune into the muscles along the side of the spine. Even though they might not be completely relaxed, as we tune into a sense of alignment in the spine, any tensions that are there become less significant. So stay with the spine for a little bit now. See if you can feel the whole spine at once, from the sacrum all the way up to the base of the skull. Just feeling that aliveness, life energy in the spine. Now the next point in the posture sequence, physical posture. So you want to let your head move back just a little bit and simultaneously drop your chin. Doesn't have to be very much. So the head moves back just a bit and the chin simultaneously drops. Go into that, what will follow right away is the back of the neck will lengthen. This is about allowing alignment through relaxing. Back of the neck lengthens, then you can play with the sense of a line or a chord coming right out the top of the head, up into the space above the body. In a sense, lifting the body up. But really what it does is it allows the body to sit still with less effort. So you can go into that space above the physical head a little bit and feel that string or that cord. And when this opens up, the body will sometimes become lighter, more easily still. And quieter. Next step is to relax the jaw. The jaw joints, the mandible, right down into the chin and the lips, and then the tongue itself inside the mouth, just letting the tongue relax and float on the lower palate. These points of consideration can begin to resonate together, supporting one another. And the last step in the 12-point sequence is now to just turn the eyes backward and down into the central channel, which is that space inside the spine, the very core of the body, running all the way from the top of the head to the perineum. Push the eyes backward, just let them gently turn and begin to rest, looking downward and inward, and just receiving what naturally comes. Drop all the way down into the perineum. Let the perineum fully open into the earth beneath the body. And like a diaphragm that breathes, let the perineum breathe, moving down into the earth on the in-breath and up on the out-breath. And as the perineum breathes with the in-breath and out-breath, just sink down 1 foot into the earth, 1 foot, 12 inches. And as the perineum breathes up and down with the in-breath and out-breath, sink further downward, 5 feet below the surface, 5 feet down into the earth. Let the whole body rest into the posture, sinking 10 feet down. Twenty feet down. Fifty feet down. Sinking both deeper and wider. 100 feet. Sinking down and down, 1,000 feet. Space opening down and out, feet down, down, down. Silent, open space of the earth, body may begin to feel like it's becoming more and more part of the earth. Not separate. Quarter mile down. Half a mile down. Conceptual, direct, felt sense of the earth. You might notice there is nothing to think about. Nothing to figure out. Obviously, the depth and wideness of the earth continues below, beyond 1 mile. The earth is sitting in space, just like the body, inseparable from it. You go all the way out through the so-called bottom of the earth now. You end up in the space. It's identical with the space above, to the left, to the right, front and back. Skin more porous, mind more porous, breath just a wave of sensation. There's a sense of resting and not much interest in altering it or changing it, then you've reached a sense of home. Home in and with the earth. At your own pace now, slowly ease back into an awareness of the perineum itself. Take your time. And then from the perineum, larger whole body itself, and then the space around the body in this room. And then the sense of the presence of each other in the room with you. When you're ready again at your own pace, and take a deeper breath if you'd like, begin to move the body a little bit and then let your eyes open again.